Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And Jane Marie and I are two of the attorneys. We are with the Herzog Law Firm. We have four convenient offices in Albany, Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, and Kingston, New York. And as you know, we're here every Saturday morning here at Magic 590 from 8 to 9 o'clock to talk to you, answer your questions, hopefully give you some interesting information about estate planning, elder law, asset protection planning, programs available through the Medicaid, Community Medicaid program, applications for nursing home admissions, estate administration, wills, trusts, powers of attorney, all those good things, beneficiary designation. So, Jane Marie, I'd love to talk to you this morning, and so you can be our first caller here by pouring yourself another cup of coffee, picking up the phone, and calling us here at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you're outside the local calling area, you can reach us toll-free at the 800 number, which is 1-800-4-7-5-tell-me-what-the-number-is. I'm blanking out here.
We don't have to worry about the 1-800 number anymore. So let's just let's just do the 518 number. Nobody has 800 service anymore. So we'll just do the 518 and be out.
That
means it's only one number you have to remember, and you should be okay.
That's easier.
518-476-5900.
All right.
It's a gorgeous, gorgeous day.
Beautiful.
Outside. Great Labor Day weekend. I don't know if anybody's doing anything. We're all still, you know, we aren't having any big barbecues. What are you got any, Labor Day plans, Jane Marie?
Not any huge plans. We're keeping it local, going local, not doing anything large, yeah. Usually we'll probably be away this weekend.
Are your kids back in college, or are they going back to college, or are they doing remote learning, or what's the deal?
Well, that's interesting. My youngest son, they were planning on going back to college, and then they moved it back 2 weeks, and then we bought everything, you know, for your freshman year. We had a whole, bunch of boxes. He was all packed. And then they canceled it at the last minute, and they just switched to online. Which sad for him,
weird.
But it's probably the best, because in Philadelphia, that's where he was going, it's they've had a bunch of breakouts. From the schools that did go back. So he probably would have been shut down or sent home anyway.
Well, that's happening here. Wouldn't it, Ben? I think, didn't SUNY Oswego just...
Oneonta.
Oneonta.
Yeah, they had over 500...
State University in Oneonta. They just went remote. I think Siena is still doing partial attending and partial remote. It's a whole different thing. It really is. Anyway. Yeah. Today is also, by the way, for you horse fans out there, the Kentucky Derby will run later at, sometime late this afternoon. And, Saratoga, the local horse, 'tis the law. Since we're lawyers, of course, is the odds on favorite. What, going out at like 3 to 5 or something like that. Now, I did have a conversation yesterday afternoon with Debbie Verney, who is one of the partners in the office here. And she, of course, knows more about the horses than Jane Marie and I do, because she lives in Saratoga. So she tells me that the smart money is going to be betting on authentic, which is like a 5-to-1 shot or something, 9-to-1, something like that. Anyway, we'll see, because I don't bet, so it we'll see what happens there. Anyway, so We just lost
Jane Marie.
Oh, we did.
So she will have to call back, and we'll get her on the phone in just a second. So carry on, Harry.
Oh, okay. Well, you know me. I'll just prattle on. So we're getting into the fall. You know, you can actually feel a little taste of fall when you go out in the mornings early these days. But we're entering what is called open enrollment pretty soon. And October 15th, it's another month or so out. But open enrollment, for those of you who are on Medicare, runs from October 15th through December 7th, okay? And this is the time of year when, if you want to, you can switch your Medicare plan and your prescription drug plan, you know, your Part B Medicare and your Part D prescription drug. My guess is most of us just roll it over, you know, like we do with CDs. You just roll it over for another 6 months or a year. That may not be the best thing for you to do. It would actually behoove you to take a look at plans. One of the big decisions here is if you're in original Medicare, you know, standalone Medicare, as opposed to what's called a Medicare Advantage program. There are cost differences. There are different services and advantages of one over the other. So you can switch from, if you're in an Advantage plan, you go back to original. If you're in original Medicare, you can switch back. So, but you got to look at these things. And it's really a gargantuan task. I don't know if you ever, Jane Marie isn't old enough. She didn't have to think about Medicare for another 15 or 20 years. Okay, right?
She'll be around for me.
We'll see if we even have Medicare by the time she turns 65. She's one of the youngsters in the office. Anyway, although she's been around for a while, she's not like a newbie, right? So look at it. You know, the thing about it is, if you go into the world of Medicare, if you're working and your employer has, you know, 2, 3, 4 different kinds of health plans, you only have 2, 3, 4 different kinds of plans to compare. Once you go into Medicare, I just read this recently, there are over 700 unique combinations of benefits that you can choose from. Now, nobody's going to analyze that up to this point, but there are websites and things where you can. There's apparently one website called eHealth where you can compare your prescription drug coverage plans and see, depending upon what medications you're taking, you might be able to get into a plan that's less expensive and covers more of the kinds of prescriptions that you take. I mean, keep in mind that the pills you take this year may not have been the pills you were taking 5 years ago when you enrolled in that plan. So it may make sense to re-examine that based on your current medications and see if there's a better plan that covers more, you know, either generic or non-generic drugs. So I'm just pointing that out to you because all this starts on October 15th, and the last day to do it is December 7th. So my advice to you would be, what's that?
It's not really a long time. It's just a little bit under 2 months.
That's all. They give about 6 or 7 weeks to make up your mind. So if I were you out there, I'd start looking at the plans now. So by late October, you've made a decision. For heaven's sakes, don't wait till December 1st to start reviewing your plans, because you're probably going to be caught in a time crunch. So I just, you know, felt it was important. And we'll mention this again as we go through the fall. There's one other website I just wanted to mention. There is a website called Medicare Plan Finder, which is an online tool put out by Medicare to help you select what might be a better plan for you. And basically, you just go on. It's called Medicare Plan Finder. It will ask you for your zip code and details on the kinds of medications you take, you know, whether you get them at the drugstore, if you get them by mail. And supposedly, it's going to help you narrow down and select a plan. You know, some of these plans you can save $400, $500, $600 a year on premiums if you can identify a plan that, you know. Because I've noticed this. I don't know, but you wouldn't. Ben and Jay Marie wouldn't, because they're not on Medicare. But in my particular prescription drug plan, Part D plan that I have, you know, some of the drugs that I used to take or that I still take are no longer covered by my plan, okay? So well, here or they're not. It's not the same drug. So the problem with that is if they don't cover it, that means I got to pay more for it. You know, so my copay is a lot higher than if it's a covered thing. So you know, be aware of that. And
are you looking for a new plan to cover your new drugs, Harry? You should be.
I might, because, you know, what we're paying right now, I think my wife and I are each paying, I won't mention the plan, but I think we're each paying like $1,000 a year just for the prescription drug plan, all right? Okay? So, and it covers almost nothing. I mean, I don't take that many pills, to tell you the truth. And my wife takes even fewer pills, because she's probably even healthier than I am. But the ones we do take, you know, they're kind of, you know, I think I just picked up a couple of prescriptions the other day, and the copay was like $150. So, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So,
that's worth looking into. Right.
It's not inexpensive. So I'm going to be looking into it myself and seeing if there may be a better plan that covers different things. So enough of that. Okay. 518-476-5900 is our number here. If you have a question about any of the things that we chat about here on the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. As you know, we have our webinars coming up, don't we?
We do. So we do our webinars every Wednesday. And this week, of course, coming up Wednesday, September 9th, we have at 10 o'clock planning for when a loved one has special needs. So we're going to talk about supplemental needs trust and other things you can do to help an individual with a disability. And then at 2 o'clock, we're going to have a webinar called How Not to Pay for Services, Long-Term Care Solutions. I like that. Yeah. So we're going to talk about how or what resources are available to help with long-term care that you can get for free or reduced cost. And one of them, which is really great. And one of them is probably going to be talking about, I'm sure, community Medicaid, because there are big changes coming up, and they're approaching really fast. Right, Harry?
Well, yeah, October 1st is only about 3 weeks away.
That's right.
And actually, I had a couple of conferences. I had a couple of conferences with clients this week who came in, and actually, because we were talking, I think last week I was on with Debbie, and, you know, we were talking about the fact that even if you're not currently in need of home care services, it would behoove people to perhaps transfer some of their assets to a trust between now and the end of the month. Now, the problem, you know, we're running out of time.
Right.
And, but if you have something like a bank account certainly could easily be transferred to a trust in 3 weeks. It could be done in a day, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Some other, you know, if you're transferring stocks and bonds to a broker's account, that might take more time. So we're kind of at the crunch period. But if you get
starting to worry about those, right?
Yeah, if you get a couple of these, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, yes, we have until October 1st, but there's kind of a little wiggle room. If you're applying for Medicaid in the fall, Medicaid is not enforcing these new rules up until January 1st. So there's a little bit of reprieve there for you. But in general, you need to try and get it done before October 1st.
Well, because apart from the transfer rules, the major change is currently there's no penalty for making transfers.
Mm-hmm.
Under the new rule, there is going to be a penalty for making transfers. But beyond that, you're going to have to be sicker next year, right? You're going to have to be sicker when they implement this on January 1st than you do now, right?
That's right. They not only changed the rules on the look back, they changed the rules on qualifying for Medicaid, a community Medicaid. So under the old rules, you had to have or need assistance with at least 2 out of 6 of your activities in daily living. So these are basic tasks you may need help with around the house, such as, you know, walking or eating or showering. And under the new rules, they changed it to three. So the goal of this is to make it harder for people to qualify. And then the same thing for individuals with, diminished capacity. They had, only one ADL, and now it's up to two. So the basic rule is, the bottom line is it's going to be harder to qualify in the future. And another change they have coming up, which is not right away, it's a little bit down the road, is they're going to switch the evaluation to an independent doctor.
An independent doctor who works for the health department, right?
Who works for the health department, that's right.
Right. He's very independent.
And they are the ones who are going to evaluate you. No, it's true. And they don't know you like your own doctor does. So they're going to do the evaluation. So one can only imagine that less people are going to be qualified with this new role.
Right. And aren't they also, as part of this evaluation process, if I understand it correctly, if you're receiving more than a certain amount of hours a week, they're going to do an evaluation as to whether or not it would be better to put you in a nursing home rather than keep you at home. Is that correct? I don't know. Do you know what the hours are? I mean, it's fairly high, I think, but...
It's pretty high. I think it's 80. I don't know if it's 80 or 120, but it's a high number. But that really is troubling because, that's putting them in charge of whether you should go to an institution or not. And it really shouldn't be, the government deciding that. It should be you deciding whether you want to stay at home or go into an institution. And just because you need a lot of hours of care doesn't mean you can't stay home. I mean, we've had several clients who had 24-hour care at home. I know you have too, Harry, right? So,
Well, now part of this evaluation process is if this so-called independent doctor decides that it's more effective for the person getting 24-hour coverage to be readmitted to a nursing home, then I guess you have to go there, or you won't be able to continue to get the coverages through the Medicaid program.
Yeah, you won't be able to get the coverage through that, and then if you can't afford it, the coverage yourself, that's going to be
But you're going to be stuck in the institute. Yeah, I mean the chronic care in the nursing home is, obviously, from everyone's standpoint, is probably the last resort. Everybody would prefer to stay home. I mean, wasn't that a decade or two ago? I remember, years ago, the county used to, when you applied, if it cost more for Medicaid to keep you home than put you in a nursing home, they made you go to a nursing home to get the services. So it's kind of the same thing, just gussied up in some kind of doctor's evaluation, right? Yeah.
Right, that was under the old, one of the old labor programs where they did a budget.
Like the Lombardi, those things.
Lombardi program, right. So it's not new. They have had these types of systems in place. But it's, coming back again.
So, the bottom line is it's all driven by cost considerations. These programs are expensive. States are broke right now. New York's not the only state that's broke. They're all broke from the financial burden of this last 6 months of the virus. And so, as with all the government, they're looking at ways to cut costs and keep programs going. So, but we're here to help. I mean, our role here is to help you understand how the programs are changing, so you can be better informed as a family into the decision-making process. And then, when you make the decision, you can then utilize our services to get the application processed and approved in a timely and efficient manner to access, whatever the services that you have. And I think, one of the big advantages our firm has is we also have on staff a care manager who can clinically evaluate the kind of issues and concerns you have. She's going to be able to let you know if, in fact, your family member lacks three of the activities of daily living, okay? Because, frankly, if you don't, there's probably not much point in, you know, going through the application process at that point. We may defer it for 6 months or so.
Yeah, that's right. It can take a long time. That is the other thing you have to keep in mind when you're applying for community Medicaid is it takes time to get approved, first of all, financially, and then go through the approval process in terms of how many hours of care you need. So you have to be prepared to see, you know, how to cover that period while you're waiting. Right? You may have to pay privately while you're waiting.
I would say, yeah, you're looking probably minimally probably 3 to 6 months, right? You know, and the problem is it could be even longer because it depends on staffing availability. So
yeah.
But the problem with these programs, the problem with all these programs through the Medicaid system are before you have any idea how much care your parent, your family members are going to get, before you know how many hours a week you're going to be approved for, you have to go through the application process and be approved from a standpoint of assets and income. All right, so the whole process, and then you, so the big advantage we have with our care manager is she's going to be able to help you come to the conclusion that at the end of the day, you probably will get, you know, 4 hours a day or 6 hours a day of care services, okay, based on the current evaluation rules and the activities of daily living. So you have at least a heads up. I mean, there's no guarantee that the evaluator from the Medicaid unit will come to exactly the same conclusions as she does, but she's pretty good at this, and it at least give you some general idea that it's worthwhile to go through the process because at the end of the road, there's going to be some care available to you. And it's a tough decision for families to make because, as Jane Marie said, it's a process, and it takes time. It costs money to go through the process and all these different things. So you really want to make sure that at the end of the road, there's actually going to be a care person there who's going to be able to help out your mom or dad.
Yeah, right, because that's the next piece of this, and that's kind of really out of our control, but it's how to find staff to work for you. Currently, there's a shortage of home care workers, and depending on where you live also. If you're in a more rural county, it can be harder to find people. So I was talking
to if you're down in Delhi or out in, you know, in the southern regions down, you know, some of the southern, Delaware County, some of the more rural counties, and this is something, of course, that's not really controllable, there may simply be a limited amount of caretakers, home health care is available in your particular zip code. So, you know, the other issue is you can go through the process and be approved, and then they may not be able to provide you with any actual care services, you know, for several months. Or possibly longer. Now, however, one of the advantages of these programs, at least currently, and I don't think this is changing, is you can, if you can find your own home health care aides, you can actually hire those people, and they can be paid through the Medicaid program. And this works especially well if we have family members who are going to be doing the caretaking, okay? Children. You can hire your children. Or your grandchildren, or your cousin, or the lady down the street who has maybe 15 available hours. Maybe she has 3 hours a day, 5 days a week to come in and help you out with personal care services. That person can actually be paid through the Medicaid system, even though they're not like a registered aide with an agency. So, you know, these are really important things to keep in mind and remember if you're in a situation where you gotta, you know, a family member who's looking for care down the road, and don't wait till they actually, you know, if you know when this is happening in your family. You know when your mother, you know, she's not eating right because she can't cook anymore, and you know she's forgetting to take her pills because she has some, you know, some cognitive issues. You know, we all see this, and it's normal to be in denial about the fact that these things are happening, but the more you can anticipate them, the more help we can be to you in terms of trying to get care and services before we have, you know, a family health crisis. And now, you know, mom, you know, she falls on her walker, you know, breaks her hip. Now you got a real serious problem, right? That may in fact require a nursing home admission. So that's what we're here for.
It also requires a rehab admission. Mm-hmm. And we have plenty of clients who call us when their, you know, parents or family members are in rehabilitation, and they want to make sure that they can come home. So that gives us some time to start to plan for it while they're in the rehab facility. But if you don't, the rehab facility is going to say, oh, they can just stay here, right? at the cost of $500 a day, we'll happily keep them, right?
So, yeah, they just move from rehab to chronic, and then but you know, who has most of us don't have $500 a day to pay the bill with. You know,
that's right. So you have to look at other options and look at bringing them home, and with the help of the Medicaid program, it's usually a bit of a patchwork, right? So care by family members, care by paid aides. You know, there's also we don't talk about this that much, but there are daycare programs that are paid for by Medicaid. So if you have someone who's a child, who's adult child who's working during the day, they could bring their parents to the care center during the day, and they could be watched and get paid, just covered by Medicaid. And that's
a way to fill in the gap. You know, if you don't have enough hours of a caretaker coming into your home, if you could supplement that with, you know, 6 hours a day of adult daycare, like Monday to Friday. I don't, you know, it's a way of having them occupied, active, and supervised for that period of time. It also, if you're the caretaker, if you're the spouse of the person, it also gives you a break, you know.
Yes, that's important. Let you go do some grocery shopping or just have some time to yourself.
Right. Or just take a nap. I mean, you know, seriously, caretaker burnout is a real serious problem with family members who are caring for their relatives, their spouses, their parents. It is a real serious problem. And so, you know, I think what we stress is if you're at a point, I guess the moral of the story, if you're at a point where you see these things coming down the road, even if it's 6 months or a year, I think it would really behoove you to call us, to call Jane Marie, me, David, Debbie, come in for an appointment, and come in and sit down for an hour, and just let us review with you your particular issues with your family member and go over the kinds of programs and services that might be available, you know, to help you out. Because this whole thing, estate planning, whether it's planning for home care or nursing home, or just doing a will or a trust, it's a learning process. There's a learning curve where you kind of need to get a broad picture of what's available out there, and then we got to narrow it down to what works best for your own family member, because they're all different. They all have different issues, and they have different care needs. And so that, coupled with the legal process of getting all this, I mean, have you ever seen these Medicaid applications? I mean, aren't they, Jamie? Some of them are like a foot high, right? Some of these Medicaid apps are a foot high, you know. I mean, all these financial records that everybody has, all of you, yeah, it's really it's something else. So anyway,
well, we are
out there. I think we're at the point where we're going to break.
We are. We're at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston,
our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And we are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, continuing the second half hour of our show this morning. We talk about estate planning, elder law, asset protection planning, wills, trusts, advanced directives — that's a fancy name for healthcare proxies and powers of attorney and stuff like that. Love to talk to you this morning. It's 8:31. We've got a half hour left here on Saturday, September 5th, Labor Day weekend. 518. I think I remember the number this half hour. I forgot the number of the first. 518-476-5900. That's our number here in the studio. That's 518-476-5900. We would love to talk to you, answer your questions, or just say hi, hello to you. Hope everybody is enjoying. I think the weather forecast this weekend is supposed to be absolutely magnificent, which is super. And we seem to have gotten to the end of the awful heat we had. Did you read that out in the Southwest, like Southern California and Nevada and
Arizona,
are having like just oppressive heat, temperatures that have never been recorded in the history of weather recording.
I know. Like 122, I seem to remember. I don't know.
It was like 120. One day this summer, I read, it actually hit 130 in Death Valley.
Oh, my God.
That's talk about cooking the egg on the sidewalk. Yeah.
Yeah, you can.
Astonishing. That's a little scary.
You'll see a fried egg on the sidewalk if you walk outside, right?
That's for sure. Yeah, definitely. So
you mentioned the advanced directives, Harry. So I want to talk about that a little bit, because I do most of the guardianships in our practice, and we have been busy with guardianships, like swamped with them. I don't know why. It just kind of comes in waves.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you have an advanced directive, that's a power of attorney and a healthcare proxy. That's putting someone in charge of who's going to make decisions for you, right, when you can't do it anymore. But there's many times where you don't have that done, and then you become incapacitated, and then you no longer have the capacity to sign a document. And then in that case, the only way to get things taken care of is to go to court and apply for a guardianship. And these are, costly. They take time. There's many different players involved. You have a court evaluator who's appointed by the court to review the case and see who should be the guardian. You have the court attorney who's appointed for the person that you're trying to get guardianship over. So they're representing their interests.
That's two lawyers, right? And then you're the lawyer for the person who's, and you're the lawyer for the person who's seeking to be appointed guardian, right? So that's three lawyers.
Cha-ching,
cha-ching.
That's right.
I mean, it's not funny. She says these things are not inexpensive. We're talking about an uncontested guardianship proceeding, right?
Yeah, this is just
uncontested. What if there's two people that want to be the guardian? What happens then?
Then you have another lawyer, right? And then it's
cha-ching.
A hearing and evidence presented from each side as to why they should be the guardian over the other person. And it can get pretty nasty sometimes, siblings fighting over who should take care of mom and dad, right? It's something you want to avoid. Not only that, after you're appointed guardian, you have a continuing requirement to report every year how you spent the person's money. So you have to do a report, very detailed report, provide all the bank account information. So there's a lot of ongoing duties that you have after you're appointed the guardian.
Harry and Jay Marie, we do have a caller on the line. We have Barb from Albany.
Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I have a question. I have a mom in assisted living, and I was thinking about when I should do a Medicaid application for her. I don't know. She recently had some health events that may in the future require her to go to a nursing home, but I don't know when to do the application. What would you recommend?
Well, you can't do the application for the nursing home ahead of time, unfortunately. But you can kind of prepare. So it may be good to look at all her assets, you know, start to get prepared ahead of time, you know, perhaps even start to gather the documents. Our Medicaid application for a nursing home requires 5 years worth of bank statements and financial statements. And they're also going to look to see if there's any transfers during that time. So sometimes we can kind of, you know, plan for that ahead of time. For example, mm-hmm. see if you made any gifts or transfers so we know what's coming up and what you would have to do. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what you could do for the nursing home. My question would be is maybe she would be a candidate for community Medicaid. Maybe she could get some help to keep her where she is.
You mean in the assisted living?
In the assisted living, yeah. Some assisted livings do allow you to have, you know, aides come in and give you additional help beyond what the assisted living is giving you.
Okay, that's a good option to think about. Because of her medical condition, I don't know when she might need to go to a nursing home. Would it behoove me to start the Medicaid application now before the October 1st deadline, so at least that part of it's out of the way?
Well, you could do the application for community Medicaid now, because that's the big change that's coming on October 1st. So you would want to make sure if she has too much money in her name that you would get that transferred out of her name before October 1st. And then you could do the community Medicaid application, and you could get her some care to start with. You know, community Medicaid, you can start off with a little bit of hours of care, and then as your care needs increase, you can get more hours of care later on. So that may be something to do to start that process for home care.
Okay.
And then again, on the nursing home side, you can just start to look at everything and kind of get that together so you're prepared for that.
How long does it take to put together a Medicaid application for her to go in a nursing home?
That depends on how many financial accounts she has.
Because she really doesn't have anything. She's only living on a little pension and her Social Security. She's got nothing in the way of stocks, bonds, savings accounts, CDs, any of that. She's been clean.
Okay.
And she's been at home over 5 years ago, so she's got no money left.
Well, yeah, if her total assets are less than $15,000, then she's already Medicaid eligible. Assuming she hasn't given away any money, any significant amounts of money in the last 5 years.
Yeah, she hasn't. She has
the case. If that's the case, then probably you wouldn't have to make any transfers. The resource level, both for nursing home Medicaid and also home care Medicaid, is $15,750.
Oh, she doesn't have.
So if she has less money than that, she's already eligible.
Okay.
Now, what you really should do is set up an appointment with one of us, come in and review her current condition. I mean, if she could benefit from getting maybe 3, 4, 5 hours a day of care at the assisted living facility, maybe you can keep her there for another year or so. I don't know. I mean, those places, you're privately paying that, right? Those are not covered by the Medicaid program normally.
What they do is they take her Social Security and pension and give her back a small living allowance.
Okay.
And I have
will do that. Yes. Okay. Well, that's great. I mean, if you could keep her there for another year, that would probably be preferable to putting her into a nursing home, right?
Yes, she doesn't want to go to a nursing home, and she loves where she is. So,
yeah.
I want her and my mom the best option. But I just wanted, you know, I'm her power of attorney, so I want to make sure that I get everything arranged for her in the event there's a health issue.
Yep.
Yeah, I would do that, and I would, you know, at some point, I mean, the first step I would say was to call our office and make an appointment, come in and sit down with one of the attorneys, and review that with her. And then I think at some point somebody has to have a conversation with this. Has the staff at the nursing home told you that you're near a point where she might have to move to a different level of care? Or as far as they're concerned, she's still okay?
Well, right now she's okay, but in the event she has another health occurrence, she might have to go to a nursing home. But we have no idea when that might happen.
Right. Well, I would come in. I'd start the process. If you're her power of attorney, you know, come in, sit down. If you want to talk to us, we'll certainly have initial consultation. We don't charge a fee for the initial consultation. If we're going to do something for you, obviously we would talk about that. You would know that ahead of time before you make a decision. But at least you'll be able. You can start the information gathering process and the kinds of services you might need. So if we can help, we always say we hope for the best and plan for the worst.
Yep, that's a good motto. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your help. I'll call your office next week.
Thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's a good call because, people don't always realize that maybe you can stretch out the time you can stay out of the nursing home by using some of the Medicaid home care.
We have clients who are in assisted living who have aides that come in during the day. You know, they might come in 3, 4, 5 hours a day to help them with, bathing, dressing, meal preparation, helping them get down to the dining room, okay, on their walker. And if the care is there, then the facility will normally, they can only care for a person up to a certain point. And I think, the ability to walk is a big consideration in an assisted living facility. But they have services there that will come around and knock on your door, make sure they know it's lunchtime. They have services that will come in and do your laundry and do some light housekeeping, like cleaning and things. But if you need more than that, it may make sense to look at these options because, if it's true of most people, the atmosphere and the collegiality in the assisted living facility is more of a home-like atmosphere than a nursing home is. And let's be perfectly honest, it's preferable.
Yeah, it feels better. It feels more like an apartment. that combined with a home health aide coming in can be really great because the assisted living, of course, they do provide the meals and some oversight, but then you're kind of on your own right during the day.
Exactly. It's not a chronic care facility. It isn't, fortunately the caller has a power of attorney. She said she has power of attorney for her mother, so you won't have to do a guardianship for her, right?
That's great. I love guardianship to do.
Well, it'll save them a bundle of money. And advanced directives like powers of attorney and healthcare proxies aren't just for old people either, are they?
No, they're not. I have, as you may know, young children. Well, not young anymore, I suppose. College-age children. And when you turn 18, that's when you become independent and your parents can no longer make decisions for you. So we don't often think of doing this for younger people.
Your kids that are in college. I mean, the example, I'm reading this example in one of these blogs, your son or daughter is away at college, okay? You call the dormitory, and a roommate says that she was admitted to a local hospital, and she has COVID virus, and she's in isolation. You call the hospital, and then guess what? The nurses won't release any information to you because your 18-year-old son or daughter is legally an adult. Those of you who have college kids who are off and away to college, and either if it's local or even more so if it's in another state, get a power of attorney and a healthcare proxy for the kids. It's really important.
It's really important to do that. You don't want to have to do a guardianship for a young person, right?
So. That's for sure. Anyway, 476-518-476. 5900 is our number here in the studio. And if you'd like to talk to us, we've got time to answer your questions and chat about these things. If you have a healthcare proxy for your adult son or daughter, and they're off to school, it probably would be a good idea to make sure that their doctor, your doctor or the child's doctor, has a mm-hmm. copy of the healthcare proxy. All you got to do is, you can probably scan it and email it to the doctor's office or take it in and let them scan it. And mm-hmm. if they're off at school, if they're at a college or university, it might not be a bad idea to get a copy to the school infirmary. I guess they still have school infirmaries, or what do they do these days? Do you know?
They do, yeah. They have health offices or medical offices at every college. So, yeah, you should send it there.
It wouldn't be a bad idea to have one on file there, because if you did call up and something was wrong with your kid, mm-hmm. the first thing they're going to ask for is a healthcare proxy. So if they have it on file, there probably is a procedure where they would have, I would guess, I don't know, but mm-hmm. there should be some procedure where they can, electronically store those things in the kid's educational records or whatever.
Yes, that's a good idea to do that. It's a good idea, of course, for everyone to have one, but you don't often think of it for younger people. So
mm-hmm.
that's a good idea to have that.
You don't, and all our listeners out there, they got their most of their kids are probably over 18, unlike yours, but they have grandchildren who are in college, it's important for them. So, raise that issue. If you're having a barbecue this weekend with your family, check out whether your 21-year-old granddaughter has signed any of these documents. It's not a problem till something happens, and then it can be a big problem. That's all. So that's where we are.
So we have some webinars coming up this week. Every Wednesday we have webinars. And I have to say, everyone's been pretty good. Everyone's learned to use Zoom in the past couple months, right? So many
of those of us, even those of us who are electronically challenged, like me.
I know. Harry has done webinars.
I have Zoom on my phone. I have actually even presented some Zoom webinars.
That's right. So we are all Zoom experts. So you can sign up for the webinar, and we'll send you a link to Zoom. It's very easy, and you just can click on. If you have a computer with a computer, you can watch the Zoom, or some people don't, and they just call in and you can listen. So that's an option as well. And the topics this week are at 10 o'clock, planning for when a loved one has special needs, and at 2 o'clock, how not to pay for services, long-term care solutions. And these are both available if you go onto our website at www.herzoglaw.com, and you can see the schedule for the rest of the month. See if anything interests you for the rest of the month, and you can plan ahead for that.
Because there's some every Wednesday. This is the 9th. It's coming Wednesday, September 9th.
Right.
And then the following Wednesday on the 16th, we're doing another two more, 10 and 2, on Medicare versus Medicaid and basic mm-hmm. elder law. And then, of course, get ready. The week of September 21st is webinar week, and we'll fill you in on those later. But we're going to have a webinar every single day of the week. And also, I think some of them are loaded on our website, aren't they, on our blog?
Yes, I was going to say that. If you can't go at these times, you can go back and watch them on our blog. Some of them are up on our blog, and I was just looking at there, and there's one that you did up here, Harry. So which one was it? Wills versus
Must have been memorable.
Harry and Jay Marie, we do have we do have another caller. We have Carol in Schenectady.
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about power of attorney. Can you have a dual power of attorney, like my son and my sister?
Yes, you can. You can appoint more than one power of attorney. It's sometimes a good idea to do that. And you have to just think about, you have a choice here. You can either require them to act together, or you could appoint them both and allow them to act separately. So the last one is a bit more flexible. So you have two people appointed, and whoever's available can do what you need done.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think that's it, because I'm concerned that my son will say, I don't know what to do, and my sister would probably be the stronger one of making a decision.
That's not unusual at all. Sometimes a lot of our clients, you want to appoint someone older to help the younger person through, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It really does. Yeah, particularly on the power of attorney and the... And on a healthcare proxy, I don't know, how old's your son?
Oh, he's in his 40s, but he still would be too nervous.
But, yeah, I think it's a good idea to appoint. You can put both of them on, and then, so when decisions have to be made, they can discuss it with each other and come up with what the best thing is to do for you, because that's what the power of attorney is required to do. They're required to act in your best interest and make sure your money gets used and your, you know, to take care of your bills if you can't sign your name anymore, or if you're in the hospital and you're, you know, like you're in a coma or something for a couple of days. So things can be done. Your property taxes can be paid. Your utility bills can be paid. They can, you know, the healthcare proxy, who's on the healthcare proxy, can talk to your doctors and nurses and make decisions about medical care and treatment. But it's the power of attorney who can talk to your insurance company and make sure that whatever they're doing is covered by your health insurance, or that, you know, and review the hospital bill and things like that. So it's a combination of things, and you kind of need to have all these things in place. And but, you know, it's a good idea. Now, you can only, on a healthcare proxy, you can only put one person at a time on that in New York State. You can't put both of them on your healthcare proxy. So in that situation, you'd have to make a decision what would be the best thing to do. And I don't know if your son is not comfortable with those sorts of decisions, maybe your sister is more appropriate at this point in time. I don't know. It was in my own family, when my mother was alive, my sister, who lived in Pennsylvania, was my mother's health care proxy, because that's where my mother lived. She lived not too far away from my mother. I'm here in Albany, New York, but as happens frequently, whenever anything happened, this is like what your son might do, my sister would call me up and say, what should I do? You know, because, you know, she had little familiarity with the procedure. You know, I'm a lawyer. I do elderly. I do this stuff every day of the week. And frankly, it's different doing it for clients, because I don't have the same emotional involvement when I'm making these decisions about my mother. So it's a little more dispassionate decision making. But it's helpful to talk to people and bounce ideas off of each other to try to come up with the best solution and the best decision making. And again, with the healthcare proxy, your agent is required to do what you want in terms of your own healthcare. And that's why it's so important to have a living will along with your healthcare proxy, because it will give them some general idea of the kinds of you know, extraordinary or not extraordinary measures you want under certain circumstances. Okay, most people don't want to be kept alive on a machine if the doctors have determined that you're gone, you know, you're brain dead, or you're not coming back. All right. So, and in order to do that, in order to legally do that, you have to have a piece of paper that says those things. So, you know, that's why these things are so important. And as Jane Marie was talking in the early part of the first half hour, the alternative, if you don't have them set up, is at some point when these emergency things happen, now we got to go into court and spend a boatload of money with a bunch of lawyers to have somebody appointed a legal guardian for the person, who would basically do the same things that your power of attorney and your healthcare proxy will authorize them to do for a mere fraction of the cost. Okay? So,
right.
Keep all those things in mind.
Good information. Thank you.
Well, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. What else we want to do? Oh, one other thing I want. You know, we have. We got a couple minutes left till the hour's up. More and more couples are over 50. I'm talking about not young couples. Over 50 are living together without getting married. Okay.
Yes.
They're just couples, you know. And many of them have been together for years, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. And for whatever reason, they choose. Sometimes it's because of financial benefits from previous spouses, Social Security, or pension benefits that might end or be reduced on marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people just, you know, they've been in a bad relationship. They don't want to do it again. They're just, you know, once burned, twice shy. And but for whatever reason, there are legal dangers of doing that without getting proper documentation in place, okay? The dangers of living together, because essentially the couple are legal strangers, even though they've been living together for 15 years, right? So, if you're in that situation, or you know somebody who's in that situation, please urge them and encourage yourself to come in and sit down with us to look at the ways that you can formalize the relationship. We're not gonna suggest that you get married, but we want you to have documentation that allows the other person to make those legal decisions for you. Again, in these advanced directives like powers of attorney and healthcare proxies and living wills, and also things like funeral arrangements, you know, because all of a sudden when somebody gets sick or dies, the family of that person can push the other member of the partnership, the domestic relationship, push them aside and say, look, I know that you and my dad lived, but, you know, I think we're out of time.
We are.
Is that the music I hear, Ben? Oh, my heavens.
That is the music.
Well, okay. Well, listen, that wraps it up for this week. Have a wonderful weekend out there, and we'll talk to you next week.
Enjoy your weekend. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.